Welcome back to the IoT for All podcast, Matt. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Glad to be here as ever.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And for audience context, I'm sure they probably were, whoever listens to this episode will probably say, hey, we just heard from Matt. And the idea we've kind of discussed is trying to have him on every quarter or so, depending on schedules. But the work that you're doing to kind of really get a grasp on what's happening in the industry and how it's changing, going to events as where you are now, talking to people and those kinds of things, I think it's good just to have a more regular cadence of discussion just to kind of keep the audience up to date on how the industry is progressing and where things are going. So we'll dive into that here in a bit. But for our audience who might not be as familiar with you and the company, can you talk a little bit more about kind of your background experience and introduce the company a bit to them?
So my company's Transform Insights. We've been going about 4 years. We're a boutique research consulting firm focused on, well, I'd say probably 80% of what we do is IoT. The other 20% is looking at some other disruptive technologies, most of which is looking at AI. Let's face it, everybody has to look at AI nowadays, right? So that's pretty much a given. But particularly, we're interested in the kind of intersection between IoT and AI. And we're also looking at a bunch of other disruptive areas around blockchain or around edge compute, a bunch of things like that. And just my personal background, so I've been an industry analyst for about 25 years, something like that. And most of that's been focused on IoT. So I like to think I'm pretty deep in the weeds on the old IoT space. And I think that's part of what we've always tried to do at Transform Insights and Makena Research. My previous company before that was sort of get immersed in the space rather than kind of watching from the outside. So that's always generally been our approach. So we spend a lot of time at trade shows, more on which later, I'm sure, and spending face time with the clients and the various other interesting players in the IoT space. So yeah, we'd like to be deep in it.
I wanted to talk about what you just mentioned regarding IoT and AI and how they're coming closer together. And I think we've been talking about that for a while now, through many of the conversations that I've had on the podcast, just about the value they both kind of play to each other. And when you think about, in order for AI to work well, need data. And where do you get data from the physical world? Sensors in the IoT space. So let's start with MWC, because that was, since you're at Channel Partners right now, what was kind of the big takeaways from MWC? How was the event? How have you seen the conversations and booths and talks around AI and IoT? Was that pretty prominent, for the event, or what other things kind of stood out to you there?
Well, I think every year at Mobile World Congress, so this was year 18, I think, for me at that show. So I pretty much have to go every year, and I love it. I mean, it's a great show. It's a fantastic opportunity to spend 4 days, say 4 days, actually. It kind of bleeds over into a day before and a day after at this stage. But essentially four solid days, sitting in rooms with lots and lots of people talking about all sorts of things. And it always gives you some fresh perspectives on things, and you get to kind of bounce ideas between various different players. So it's an absolutely critical one for us. And, you know, I wouldn't miss it on it, and I love that as a show. But it's quite interesting watching it evolve. Every year there is a buzzword that everybody has to do a find and replace on their screen printing for their collateral on the stands or for the big banners, right? So this year it was definitely generative AI. In previous years, it's been sustainability, or it's been IoT, or it's been 5G, or it's been, you know, some other hot new topic. So there's kind of a bit of a find and replace going on, which is kind of funny to watch. But the telecom space certainly looking very closely, and it's a telecom show, right? It's a mobile show. So there is a lot of interest in AI, but mostly it's kind of operational, right? It's kind of to do with how you're running your customer care programs, what you're doing with chatbots, and more fundamental to the telecom space, what you're doing about network management and a variety of other things like that, right? So it's kind of the conversations are all how telecoms is a vertical that's also using AI, rather than really how the companies that are involved in the space are actually kind of serving AI and supporting AI. And the conversations were similar on the IoT side of things, you know, people looking at how you can use more forms of automation to drive out costs, how you can use automation in terms of better threat identification on the sort of security side of things, which is all very useful, but it's kind of how do I take AI and use it to do my more or less my business as usual, but in a more efficient manner. And I think that sort of misses a trick a little bit, which is that actually AI and IoT are, and I've probably spoken this on the podcast, AI and IoT are very closely linked. And as you said, it's producing a lot of the data that you might be applying the AI to. But at the same time, there's also a question of where do you run the payloads within the network? How do you manage the resources? Where does the compute function sit? How do you handle all of those different elements of the sort of AI stack, I suppose? And it's incumbent on the companies that are supporting IoT to think about, well, if I'm connecting a video camera, where do you want processing for that to sit? Do you want to sit on the device itself, or do you want it to sit on some kind of edge node at the edge of the network, or some place in between, or some place further up towards the cloud? And how do you manage the various resources between those? And those conversations I more or less didn't have. So it's all been about how you can use AI for by AI to your existing processes rather than what it means more broadly. But, you know, I guess the low hanging fruit is that, you know, shaving some costs off the bottom line, or quite the right expression, is it? But shaving some costs off to improve the bottom line. And so it's that rather than how does AI make a fundamental shift to how everything works. There's a few companies that are talking about those kinds of things. The company called Telnix, which does IoT connectivity, but is part of an offering that involves a whole stack of other capabilities around managing data flows. And I'm overly simplifying, and they'd probably be horrified by the way I'm describing it. But the thinking is, okay, they recognize that there's going to be all of this AI payload that's got to be happening somewhere, and you've got to manage the relationships, and you've got to have some kind of offering that includes the compute and the processing and of that data bundled in as part of an offering. So that's the kind of the AI piece.
The one question, I guess, that a lot of people have been having is when people and companies are talking about AI, utilizing AI, you're right. The low-hanging fruit seems to be the easy wins for companies in order to improve operational efficiency and eliminate potentially costs and be due to task resources that had to be done manually can now be done with an AI tool. But one of the things I think happens a lot, and I'm curious how you saw this at the event, people were basically, it seems like in their marketing language, really just trying to fit in AI anywhere they possibly can, just not to be left out. But in reality, not everybody's offering an AI solution. Did you ever get that vibe while you were at the event, seeing companies who said they were doing AI, but really, in your mind, aren't doing AI? It's kind of the same thing that companies have been doing for a while. Or how have you kind of seen that perception? Because I think that's where a lot of people are getting confused, really looking for AI solutions, but also getting caught up in times working with companies who really aren't doing AI, but say they are because it's a nice buzzword at the moment.
Yeah, completely. It happens all the time. I think the bigger tech companies tend to be a little bit more guilty of it than maybe the IoT focused folks. Okay, so I spent most of my time with the platform providers and the connectivity providers and the device vendors and all of these kinds of guys on the IoT side of things. And they're much less guilty of that than most, I think. But if you look at more broad based technology vendors, yeah, there's a tendency to throw AI into the mix and sort of hope some of it sticks, in the same way that we saw that with IoT back in the day, back maybe 5 years ago. 10 years ago, they kind of felt like they needed an IoT message regardless of whether there actually was a really an IoT capability in there. So nothing changes much in the space in that respect. There's always a element of wanting to be perceived to be doing the hot new thing.
It also does force these companies over time to actually have to back up what their claims are and really support those types of things. Otherwise, people will start to realize who the real players are and who are not. Just like you mentioned with the IoT space, a lot of companies are saying, oh, we have, they maybe were a software development company that all of a sudden say, hey, we can build IoT solutions. But it's a different kind of beast at times building an IoT solution than it is just building, a piece of custom software for somebody.
One of the things that we're doing now, not me really, some of the other guys, I've kind of got my work cut out on the IoT side of things, but one of the tasks that we're taking on is really to kind of dig into this AI ecosystem and understand who all the players are, who does what with whom, who's actually relevant, and try and remove some of this sort of opacity from this AI vendor landscape. It's not just about vendors, it's the whole ecosystem really, and understand what that actually looks like, who's buying what from whom, and how can companies position themselves actually to get into this AI space. I think that's a fascinating thing. And in fact, very similar to what I'm trying to do here at this event that I'm at the moment. Nice segue, right? Into talking quickly about this channel partners event, right? You've kept asking me about channel partners, about channels programs and indirect and how you get out there. And there's a massive focus on that in IoT at the moment, because everybody's looking at ramping up their go-to-market just to try and, sell a bunch more stuff, right? I mean, that's not too fine a point on it. And lots of people are asking me, what do you think the opportunity is in the indirect channel through all the various resellers, value-added resellers, managed service providers, all of these kinds of players? And I had to confess, it's not a space I'd looked at a huge amount. I knew it a little bit, but I wanted to kind of get grips with it. And that's why I came over here, because there's a whole lot of opacity there as well. There's probably 20 different descriptions of companies that sort of sit in this indirect space, whether it be managed service providers or value-added resellers or distributors, or there's a whole stack of these players. And what I wanted to get a handle on was, okay, well, actually, who's doing what and where with whom, and specifically in the context of IoT, to be able to identify who actually represents an opportunity to get to sell into the end user, because most of at the end of this string of different channel players, there is a company that probably has some requirement for IoT and how are they best being served. And in that respect, it's an interesting exercise to come here and sort of work out how to hang different companies and different roles on certain pegs to be able to say, okay, these companies handle billing and these companies are actually fulfilling on delivering various pieces. So we've kind of the approach I'm taking is kind of tease that out and work out what everybody's doing and how they're doing it. And in that respect, it's a very interesting show, because it kind of sits between the two extremes of trade shows. One of the other questions we always get is, which trade show should we be promoting ourselves at, right? And typically there's two types. One is that the sort of horizontal IoT shows or telco shows, things like Mobile Congress, but then a whole bunch of other IoT specific shows. And that's quite heavily skewed towards it being ecosystem talking to ecosystem. Whereas at the other end of the spectrum, you've got the vertical shows, things like there's the HIMSS show going on in Orlando this week, which is a healthcare show. I wanted to try and get across between the two, but it kind of proved impossible to do. But there's that, and there's all sorts of shows related to whether it's retail or automotive or utilities. We had one of our guys with a distributor a couple of weeks ago, right? So there's advantages and disadvantages to both. One is, are there really any buyers at these horizontal shows and at the vertical shows? How many of those people are actually interested in IoT, right? So, but somewhere in between, this channels approach or this channels event, it's very horizontal because everybody's talking about all sorts of ICT products and the vendors in the space are doing all sorts of things. But they are definitely the kind of companies that are actually dealing directly with the customers. And so you sort of get this opportunity to sell to people or get yourself in front of people who actually are potentially able to sell your product to other people. So in that respect, it seems like a pretty interesting show. Sorry, at that point, I've kind of rambled on and spanned across multiple shows and multiple topics. You might want to keep me honest a little bit now.
The IoT industry as a whole, we've always struggled with the fragmentation of the industry and requiring different companies that focus on different areas, whether it's the hardware, the connectivity, software, security, to come together to bring a solution to market. And for the longest time, it was always about how do you piece those together correctly to provide a solution that actually solves a real problem. It went from everyone having a platform to everyone kind of having a vertical platform to everyone finally starting to see that these more point solutions are probably the way forward. But all the different pieces need to be thought out, planned out, and ready for a potential buyer. Obviously, there's levels of customization at times, environments are different, use cases are different. But for the most part, you've got to be able to at least know kind of what you're building and who you're building it for. And seeing how that is now coming more to the forefront in discussions and the realization by companies say, hey, we have to be part of an end-to-end solution in order to really have the best chance at reaching scale is something that aligns really well with what we are doing and our focus over these next coming months. Because we feel like that's always been an area it's struggled. Companies will say, okay, I understand what IoT is. I can see how it can provide value, but what can it do specifically to solve these problems at a cost that is affordable for the organization? And it's been a struggle for a lot of organizations. They'll all say they have a platform that can do all these different things and build anything you need, but those aren't the ones that seem to really kind of lead the way. It seems to me from the conversations I've been having that the ones that are building solutions that are end-to-end, focus on a particular vertical and problem are the ones that are really acquiring the attention of buyers because they're able to relate and have more domain understanding to speak to them and sell to them. And that's what I think is really interesting to kind of see the progression of the industry.
Yeah, and those channels, the generic term being used is advisor, but that covers a whole multitude of things. But the point is they have a close relationship with the customer. And they understand pain points and they're responsible for kind of pulling the solutions together. Co-selling seems to be the word of the conference. Everybody's talking about co-selling and that writ large in IoT, right? For all the reasons you just mentioned, you've got hardware, you've got connectivity, it's just you've got applications, right? You've got that, you've got various other end. And how do you actually turn that into words? So, product and this idea of co-selling between the various players. I think that's interesting.
So as we wrap up here, let me ask you, going to these two events and the other work that you do on a daily basis, what should the audience be thinking about, looking forward to, kind of expecting as we get into the second quarter of this new year?
Well, I think the Mobile World Congress one is always a good bellwether for that, and I might talk a little bit about that if I may. So there's some really interesting trends came through from that. I always go off to that show and have a view of how the space sits. And then after all of those conversations in all of those meeting rooms and all those stands, there's a whole bunch of different ways of thinking about the space come out. One is around customization being a killer, right? So try to render your offering into something that's a bit more productized, that doesn't need customization, and don't kind of always be saying yes to the customer every possible opportunity. So that was a kind of interesting interesting take, whether there's anything to apply to any given company's business models is another one. 5G starts to look pretty interesting at about now. The challenge with 5G always was that there was a lot of promise around it, but actually in reality, no one really, or very few companies actually really deployed 5G yet, because it was the access network with 5G, but the core network wasn't 5G. And that meant that a whole load of the functionality that really looks interesting around the programmability of the network and doing network slices and guarantees on connectivity and so on weren't really available, but they really are starting to come online now. So that's starting to look pretty interesting. And actually, as a side note, I kind of think that the a lot of the learnings that have been done on the private network side of things can be actually ported over into the support for 5G applications on the public network. I've never been a massive believer in the dedicated standard private network, but just the economics are incredible. But there have been a lot of learnings on how you support the various 5G applications. So that's kind of interesting. Another big topic was around eSIM. Everybody wanted to talk about eSIM, and very specifically the SGP32 standard that just came out, the GSM Association. And a lot of question marks about, okay, right, kind of now we've got to grips with what this technology looks like. It's quite an interesting one. It allows you to remotely manage what the SIM profile is on the device. You don't need to go through the carrier and you don't need direct access to the device. So those were the two approaches that previously were enacted. A couple of other technologies called SGP2 and SGP22. So either you needed to go to the carrier and say, can you do this for me? Or you needed to go to the, actually have the device in front of you and manage it directly. But now you can do that remotely. That's kind of interesting. Okay. And sort of evolves the technology and improves it. And there's a couple of other improvements in there as well. They need to support SMS, so with certain technologies, and support for some of the low power or the more constrained protocols and so on. But the issue isn't the technology. The issue is, what are the business models look like for this? Okay. So just because I can move my connections from one operator to another operator, should I? Do I have the commercial relationships with multiple operators? What happens to all the back-end systems when I make that switch across? This is non-trivial stuff. And the conclusion is actually this maybe really needs to be done as a managed service. And if it needs to be done as a managed service, it maybe doesn't look that different from the other technologies that already existed. There may not be that many companies who are actually able to make those changes and do those and kind of handle that technology directly themselves. So that was pretty interesting. I traveled over to Barcelona by train from the UK this year, and I set myself the task on the Paris to Barcelona leg of that journey, 6.5 hours on the train. I thought, okay, sit there with a blank piece of paper and work out what the commercial implications are of that as a new emerging technology, and I never quite got to the end of it. But we're kind of working through what it looks like, and I think I've kind of got a handle on it now. And it looks like there's a new function to be performed, but it's probably done as a managed service and handled by players who kind of sits adjacent to this, whether it's a connectivity provider or a SIM vendor or a platform provider or whatever. But that's certainly something that's there's a lot of people focused their attention this year. This quarter. I should also mention, you spoke to Paul Bradley at Keegan about SGP41. Well, actually more broadly, you spoke to him about in-factory profile provisioning, for which there is also a standard coming through that same process within the GSMA for that. But in-factory profile provisioning was pretty interesting to me. This is the idea that manage the SIM profile within the factory. The manufacturer of a device can actually handle that SIM provisioning approach. Now, he'll have gone into it in way more detail, and he may have mentioned that we published a white paper between Keegan and Transform Insights looking at this IFPP space. But it's very interesting additional approach to this SIM provisioning requirement, and one that's great news for anybody who's using low power devices who looking at doing in field provisioning where they're going to burn through a whole load of the battery, just doing that initial bootstrapping and management, that initial profile selection. Whereas if you do it in the factory, great, you can then push that device out on 100% battery rather than whatever it ends up being once it's, you have to do that in the field. So it's an interesting one, but he'll have talked about it much more eloquently than I have, and in much more detail than I have, I'm sure. But anybody who didn't catch that episode would be, yeah, I'm doing your job for you now. Anyone who didn't catch that episode of the IoT for All podcast, I recommend taking a look at that one.
Yeah, we spoke as listening to this, the episode came out probably a week before this, but that was something we covered towards the end of the conversation, talking about the provisioning and how that kind of changes when for OEMs now versus kind of how it was done in the past. But all really good stuff. It seems like these events were kind of overall a success. Learned a good bit. Kind of got a pulse on what's going on. The Channel Partners is a interesting event that I might look at going to next year. It's one we've never been to. But you made a good point. There's a lot of people, and they ask us the same kind of questions: is what events should we go to do X, Y, and Z? Whether it's find partnerships to sell into specific verticals. And my answer is very similar. It's like if you're looking for partners, the horizontal events are usually better for that. If you're looking for customers in a specific vertical, the trade shows are probably better for that. Just depends on kind of making sure you find the right ones to go to. But Channel Partners, like you said, sounds like it really sits right in between them. So it'd be something that we'll have to explore looking at next year for sure.
T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon were all there. Core were there. iBasis, Telnix, who I mentioned earlier. There was a decent chunk of IoT players. One other thing, actually, I didn't mention yet, and actually I should do, around key trends that are happening right about now is around regulation and compliance. And interestingly, this didn't really come up very much during the conversations in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. And I really expected it to, because there is one of the things that I said back at the start of the year, we put out these transition topics where we talked about all the interesting stuff that's going on in the IoT space for the next 12 months. One of those was regulation. I actually put that as my number one thing, that there is a lot of polarization happening in terms of how the world of IoT is regulated. So you're getting US and EU and China, and how you manage the various regulatory challenges associated with working in each one of those is becoming a more challenging thing. Now, it's not impossible to navigate, but it does mean that there's an additional compliance obligation on just about every company in the IoT space. But no one was really talking about that very much in Barcelona, which I thought was quite interesting. So, you know, normally I go in there and I come back with my conclusions about things, which are sort of pretty similar to what my thinking about it was going in, because when I'm thinking about going in, tends to be things I talk to people about. But regulation is one of those that I'm going into the event thinking this is brilliant, and actually come out thinking maybe no one thinks this is a big deal, but actually we very much do. You've got things like the US Cloud Act and the potential conflict that has with some of the EU regulation about what you can can't do with the customer data, because the Cloud Act puts some obligations on US companies to share data with US agencies regardless of where it's generated in the world, and the EU regulations say no, you definitely can't do that, and there's a kind of a friction that exists within that, and there's probably six or seven other examples of regulatory things that are kind of bubbling up just right now. So that's kind of a we want to note that people aren't people weren't really talking about it that much.
For audience who wants to kind of follow up with questions, learn more about the work you all do, digest the content you put out. I'm sure you're going to put out content after you get back from these events. What's the best way that they can kind of stay in touch and follow along?
You can check us out at transformerinsights.com. That's Transformer with an A. There's a blog, a bunch of other free content that's available on the site. In fact, there is already a Mobile World Congress blog post from me. And I will doubtless be doing something based on my furious note taking at the Channel Partners event over the last couple of days. I will be compiling some thoughts on what the implications of all this stuff are for IoT, and I'll be putting some stuff out about that.
Well, we'll definitely keep an eye out for that and get it out to our audience when it comes out too and spread it around. But Matt, as always, thank you so much for being here. I'm sure we'll talk in a few months and kind of just keep the audience abreast of what's going on in the space. So really appreciate your time. I know you're out west a little early, but appreciate you jumping on and chatting with us today.
No problem at all. Thanks, Ryan.